RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Tuesday morning is Tech Tuesday morning here at RCR. Stephen Sykes is back with me. Hi, Stephen. Good to have you again.
Thank you. How you doing?
Good. Now, I was about to intro last Tech Tuesday, and this AI voice or kit, some sort of voice, popped out of nowhere, and I thought I didn't have you on about it because I needed to decide where I thought that came from. And I think you must have dropped that into the program somehow because I didn't see where it came from.
It came out of left field a little bit, didn't it?
How do you have access at that level?
We have Waze.
Yeah, but now I can have a conversation potentially with Kit or anyone, it seems to me. Am I right?
Yeah, we are certainly heading to that stage, and that sort of technology is getting, it's actually been accessible for a long time, but it's just getting more and more accessible to everyone.
Yeah, okay. All right, so I think last week you were talking about Tech Week, so we'll get into that and break that down, what you heard, what the curly questions you asked, because I'm sure you can't have Stephen Sykes at an event like this and avoid a curly question from him and maybe a few other people in the know as well. We'll get into that shortly, but let's start off as we always do with a bit of feedback. What have people been writing in with, Stephen?
So the first thing was that Jane says that she loved hearing from Kit, wants to hear more from him.
Oh, wants to hear more. Well you're talking to the right guy.
I can say if that's the way you feel, I'll just go pack my bags now.
Okay. All right. Well, that's nice that someone liked it. Thank you, Jane. What else? Who else?
So somebody was asking about or was wanting my opinion on or to comment around the safety of Wi-Fi 7. The Wi-Fi 7, as per the link they provided, came with a Netgear router that was being released soon.
Router.
Yeah.
Router. It's router.
router,
but okay.
Okay. So it's you know, the latest generation of Wi-Fi technology is turning up and stuff. And, of course, it's the latest thing to try and get you to separate yourself from your money to buy the newest thing. So the short version is, well, the question really is it injurious to health, for example, or other issues we should know about? So, because the frequencies are certainly higher than earlier generations, and the higher the frequencies go, then the impact that that's going to have on the human body.
Because that's more energy, isn't it, ultimately?
Yeah, and, you know, you've got more of them than the Wi-Fi soup, the EMF soup just gets thicker and thicker, particularly when you add in smart cities as well, which we'll get into later on too.
Looking forward to that. So does this, what's the difference with this new Wi-Fi? Is it what, bigger, stronger, faster, more bandwidth? What's the deal?
Yeah, all of that.
Okay. That's about it, is it?
Yeah.
All right. How long has this been around? I haven't heard of this new Wi-Fi.
Well,
I hear of things.
It takes time to ratify very standards and invent things and then trickle down. And it's been around for a little while, but it's sort of really coming out to us at the consumer level. I mean, it doesn't feel like that the 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi was around very long before faster ones turned up.
Yeah, but it seems to be all right where I am. I mean, it performs well. Do we need a kick in its capacity at all? Is there a demand for it, or is it just because someone can?
A little bit of all of that. I mean, if you consider, if you wind back the clock a lot, I felt like I could do quite an awful lot on a computer with 32K of RAM.
Yeah.
And then when you add in like several gigabytes now, you think, well, I should be able to do, orders of magnitude of thousands of things more than I could before. But you can't, because all the software you're running is a lot more complicated than what you were using way back in the late 80s or early 90s. So we'll just do more and more and more and more and more of it.
Yeah, I've got a flight simulator program. It's the latest one, of course. Fantastic graphics. so real. And I think that that section's off for itself 6 gigs of RAM just to operate.
Yeah. I mean, and you probably want more in order for it to be smooth.
Well, it is quite smooth, and you can dial in the use of it, and it'll pair back, you know, some of the quality and everything. But, I mean, I remember having a hard drive of, you know, 32 megabytes once. So, anyway, all right, so that answers the questions that have come into 2057 and inbox at realitycheck.radio, does it?
Yep, I think so.
Okay, news, newsy stuff, tech newsy stuff. What are we hearing this week?
So very recently, it came out that Scarlett Johansson was quite upset when Sam Altman at OpenAI used her voice, was called Sky, in ChatGPT 4.0, and she released a statement about it whereby last September she received an offer from Sam Altman who wanted to use her voice for ChatGPT 4.0, and his view was that if she voiced it, she could help bridge the gap between tech companies and creatives and help consumers to feel comfortable with the shift that people have around people and AI. And he felt that her voice would be comforting to people. And she ended up, after some thought, declining the offer. And then 9 months later, her friends, family, and the general public all noted how much the new system that was called Sky sounded just like her.
Oh, so an AI of an AI.
Well, it was an AI that had a voice called Sky that sounded like her.
Yeah, but taking her voice, turning it to AI, and then copying the AI voice to sound like her, was what I was thinking.
Well, see, is she was a bit, shall we say, annoyed and angered that even Sam Altman actually produced that voice that sounded so like her that her friends and family couldn't tell her from the system. And Sam Altman even said that the similarity was intentional and tweeted a single word, her, which was a reference to a movie she was in 2013 where she was the voice of an AI there in that movie.
Okay.
And so he's kind of, he acknowledged that there was an intentional similarity. And then so she got a couple of lawyers involved and then setting up what OpenAI had done and said, please detail the exact process that they created the voice. And then OpenAI took it away. So they didn't actually want to engage. They just took it away.
And his reason for that voice was what? Did you say understanding or caring or calming or something like that?
Well, he said that he wanted to use her as an example as a way to make people more comfortable around people who do creative works and an AI system and felt that her voice would be comforting to people.
What about a commanding male voice?
Well, could have been that too, but...
Too toxic.
The point is that she said no. They went somehow ahead and did it anyway.
Did they think they were bigger than her?
Potentially. She said no, they went and did it anyway, admitted that what they created was really like her and admitted that it was. And it's like, well, she said no. You did it anyway.
Oh, dear. All right. And this is something that sounds like it could be big and it's only days away in Singapore, June 6th, I think, the Super AI Conference.
Yes.
What do we expect? Who's turning up? And what do we expect? I suppose all the rock stars of the AI world and more.
Well, Edward Snowden will definitely be there, and he was last time, and he's been quoted as saying that responsible AI does not and must not mean the ruthlessly censored and repressive models that Google has been so publicly flaunting.
Ah, okay.
But I suspect, even though the quote I have doesn't say so, I imagine that he feels that extends to other companies also.
What do you expect to come out of this? We mentioned Snowden, but what do you think will be the takeouts or the takeaways? Yeah,
that's a tough one. It's hard to know. I mean, we're about to get into talking about Tech Week, but there is certainly, you know, people are conscious about the risks of it. There's talk about it, but then I'm not confident that I am seeing the application of these concerns that people have around it, even though they acknowledge it being there.
Yeah.
Like, for example, in a few talks with Tech Week, there was the theme that AI won't necessarily take jobs, but a person who's got skills with AI might, and businesses that are using AI are likely to be the ones who take the work away from the ones who aren't using it.
Or dealing with the functions where things fall through the cracks of AI.
Yeah.
But they'll be more and more limited as the thing evolves, you would imagine. I can tell you, I know sectors now already, people are worried about their positions re-AI and the use of, particularly in bigger companies and corporations for accounting and things like that, is really starting to move into that space. So,
definitely.
Know, watch
and
out, you know.
One of the examples given by Deloitte was how it's used in the legal space. They gave an example where you could analyze fraud when you can get the system to analyze, you know, not 10,000 emails and then scrutinize it and look at what do an analysis on emails and work out tone, even on the written word.
Yeah, wow.
And calculate probability on the intent behind words and sentences. And there's always the emphasis that was always given that there must be human oversight with all of this.
Yeah. Yeah, and also you can link all sorts of things to other things, you know, and build that picture. All right, well, hopefully once that conference has been on, we can sort of break that down a bit too in a few weeks. All right, Tech Week. I knew you were heading there. What was the experience like?
It was kind of what I expected. As we talk more about it, you'll hear some of the opportunities that I leveraged in terms of the questions. But something I learned that was kind of interesting. In the time it takes to reach 100 million users, the mobile phone took 16 years. The internet took 7 years to reach 100 million users. Facebook took 4.5 years to reach 100 million users. Can you take a stab in the dark as to how long it took ChatGPT to reach that many?
Less than a year.
3 months.
Yeah. That's well, I was being conservative. I knew I was being. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I see,
I was going to take a while, though.
Well, yeah, watch that space. But one of the presentations was around Microsoft's Copilot, which is part of their AI system, which that is now on offer by them and being built into their Windows 11 operating system. With all these presentations, you know, some of them were virtual, and Tech Week was around the whole country. There were physical sessions you could go and sit on or sit in, and in Christchurch there was roughly half an hour of presentation and followed up by half an hour of questions. So I sort of, you know, took plenty of ointment to put flies to put into the ointment. And around Copilot, I said that, you know, I brought up the fact that Mozilla, as far as I knew, still hadn't had their question answered by Microsoft as to how they had trained their Copilot system, given that they had invested $10 billion into OpenAI and also had disbanded with their ethics committee. And after I sort of asked that question, my brain goes into trying to key takeaway in the answer, and I couldn't really find any. And then there were other people who then after me decided to ask questions and referenced my questions and concerns as well. So I don't really know what to take away from that particular presentation, but there were strong themes of security, but privacy didn't really feature so much at all. And that was something I saw a lot because, and I made the comment that people particularly even in the cybersecurity area, they have a strong focus on security of a system, but forget about privacy.
Yeah, well, that was our first program, the distinction between those two things, fundamental.
Exactly. They are very fundamental, yes. But I'm not seeing it. I'm really not seeing it.
Is that because there's an over-enthusiasm about it, you know, that's sort of blocking everything else out, or is it convenient not to talk about to go there? Because co-pilot implies, like, you know, an assistant, right, an AI assistant on Microsoft.
Yeah.
You could end up asking all sorts of things of this assistant, and which could reveal details of, you know, I would say intimate details, but very specific details of who you are, what you do, what you like, where you go, who you talk to, the questioning that you have, the hang-ups you have, the list goes on, doesn't it?
Yes, but all of that stuff you just mentioned, you don't even need Copilot in order to know those things.
No, but inevitably people will start using it in that way, won't they?
Yeah. Because
it'll be the simple thing to do for any question, any assistance.
Yeah, you won't necessarily need to be a big tech type company in order to find out those kinds of things about people.
I mean, if I said to Copilot, look, I really want to go on a date. I don't really want to, but I'm just hypothetical. I really want to go on a date, but I don't want to do this, 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 and this, and this. Already it's worked out your personality, hasn't it?
Well, if you've been using a system whereby it is analyzing what you have been doing,
but of course it completely
builds up a picture.
Where's the value? That's where the value is, that data, right?
Yep.
Okay.
And Windows 11 has got some nasty stuff built into it, which we'll talk about another time.
Okay. I think I'll run that. Okay. And all the other things that you tell me not to. VQuest building design software. What's that about? It sounds sort of big. VQuest. It sounds like something. What is it?
It's actually a really impressive piece of software. It is really, really good. But there are institutions of thought whereby the focus is so strong on decarbonizing things.
So it's a woke piece of software.
Oh, I suppose you could call it that. But basically what it does is, like, you create a design for a building. It's typically commercial, and you run it through the software, and it looks at your design, materials that you're going to use, and it makes this is how I understood it, that it makes recommendations, like, if you substitute this material for this material, then you'll decrease your carbon effect, taking into account materials that store carbon and other ones that emit carbon. And so concrete is looked down upon now, and as a result, concrete manufacturers are now adding in, I'm trying to think what he said, was it graphite or graphene into it in order to make it more carbon friendly, whatever. So that was very interesting. And potentially any renovations that you might have to do that require a building consent will end up being looked at. You know, what's the point? What's the takeaway on the carbon footprint? Then there's the potential whereby if you are building a new house, will you be able to negotiate a lower interest rate with your bank if the build has been analyzed by a software like this and come up with materials that are carbon footprint friendly? Which, because this being so strong in decarbonisation, it reminds me of the old argument with paper versus plastic, when a long time ago cutting down trees and making things out of paper was bad, so we go and use plastic because then we can reuse it a lot. And now all of a sudden that didn't work out because now we've got oceans full of plastic. And so now we've swapped one problem for another, and maybe things will go full circle and we'll go back to paper.
And you know, and you know that this will always drive the most expensive option, won't it?
Yeah.
Well, and you won't be able to argue against it because you'd be killing Granny and the planet potentially.
Well, this system seems to work well enough that you don't increase the cost of your build.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah.
And potentially they gave examples whereby you could actually extend two more floors on top of a building because you've gone and done these other things.
Oh, I got that wrong there. My assumption is always it's going to drive a new level, which is always inevitably more expensive. We will see, though, won't we?
Yeah, yeah. It was impressive nonetheless.
Yeah. Okay. And that is VQuest. It's building software. Before we get on to smart cities, government digital ID, did that come up?
Oh, did it what? And I have to say that, well, this is my interpretation, right? But government seems so excited about what the work they're doing around this. And it's like, this is, forget sliced bread. This is better than
is this
anything.
Kids in anticipation of the you know, the super birthday party they're about to go to?
The what?
Well, you know how kids get really excited by things.
Oh,
you know,
okay, yeah.
They get so, they're fizzing so much, they're out of control.
Yes.
I'm wondering if that's the equivalent here.
Well, because like there's questions around, you know, can we opt out of digital IDs? And there were a few presenters, but one of them said that, yes, you can just carry on as normal, but I want to opt into the presenter because it's, can you complete that sentence with a single word?
Yeah.
You can? What's the word?
Well,
he wants to opt in because it's
convenient.
You got it.
Yeah.
It's a gold star and a chocolate fish for you.
I'm depressingly correct.
Yes.
That's the sell job all the time. They know it works. They know it works.
And of course they're trying to say that it's a safe and trusted digital identity system and that we need to have one of those.
Need.
That was the word in the slides.
Any backup on the need bit?
Well, they say that it provides the benefits of a coherent digital identity system for citizens, has access to services, trust and confidence, greater choice. For businesses and agencies, you've got efficiency, verified information, consistent rules. For the government, you can deter/detect breaches, safe information sharing, international alignment.
Information sharing, even that's unsafe, even the concept of it.
Yeah, well, they sold it on that you can choose what information you want to give to who.
What, to the IRD or vice versa? It's probably rules already there, but you know how it goes, you know?
Yeah, and the DIA is kind of where it's coming from.
Yeah, okay.
But myself included, we asked some pretty interesting questions. You know, it's are there going to be laws that change it from being voluntary to something that's compulsory? There was, because they gave the example of, you know, if you leave your wallet behind, then you can still go and pay for things. Like, dude, what if you forget your phone, you drop your phone?
Yeah, just as likely to lose your wallet. And how often do you lose your wallet? I've lost my wallet once in the last 30 years, probably.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's all sort of, ooh, it's amazing. But
yes, that's how it feels like. And in fact, I'll tell you what, in one of the meeting in the chat, somebody wrote, so the anti-vaxxers were right after all. The vaccine pass was to soften us up for 1984.
Yep, I think so. All right, we've only got about 7 or 8 minutes left. So let's get on to the smart city part of Tech Week. And what did Stephen Sykes make of that? And how did you sort of play into that? Because you were physically there for some of that.
Well, interesting you said some of that because I'd got my timetable messed up and I turned up quite literally as the talk was finishing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. However, that didn't hold me back.
Okay, last word.
So I asked a question and they presented me with a microphone and I thought maybe for the rest of the week they'll make sure they'll never give me a microphone ever again.
Yeah, so did make it worth something, right?
I did. And I said, apologies for being late, my time's confused. And then I said, under what democratic process did the people of Christchurch vote and decide to have a smart city?
Oh, knowing curly full question.
Well, knowing full well there wasn't one.
So was there a long pause?
No, not really. But the person who was actually doing the presenting, she did say she was responsible for it. Her name is Grace De Leon, and I did note at the front row there was also Michael Healy, who is the Smart Christchurch Program Manager. Because I also talked about when you sign up for a website, you have the opportunity to read terms and conditions, privacy policies and stuff like that. So by being in the city, are you by virtue of your physical presence doing the equivalent to that because you're there?
Agreeing to the terms and conditions, yeah.
Yes, by physically being there. And the only answer they can say was that with the pedestrian counting, well, that it was just counting and it was all anonymized. And I'm thinking I'm not satisfied with any of the answers that I'm getting. And I did see at the corner of my eye a few people nodding away to what I was asking. So clearly there were other people in the room thinking along similar lines.
But, so it's all right to anonymize that data, but it's not all right to anonymize any vaccine data.
Well, the other thing too is that they say, oh, it's all anonymized. Well, hang on a minute. There have been many, many examples whereby anonymized data has been de-anonymized.
Like wound back. Yeah, exactly.
So I don't see that as a selling point. And this is a slippery slope. And I've been presented with a piece of feedback for RCR, which someone has concerns, a person called Mike, has expressed concerns around the surveillance cameras and advanced sensors that they have. But don't worry, Mike, we're getting more into smart cities next time and the week after that as well, because this is, from my point of view, one of the most biggest battlefields that we have right now.
I think you're right. And also, I mean, you've just given us a real brief description, but it sounds like, and I heard this from Hamilton when we had a report from Hamilton last year after the smart 20-minute city was their thing up there, slight variation. But it turned out that none of the people there pitching it, saying it was so convenient and great idea, really knew anything about it beyond it being a great idea. Someone had told them. Sounds here like the answers you got, there's an assumption that because we will inevitably tick the boxes of convenience, making sense, we don't have to have answers.
No.
To the questions you're answering. I don't know if it's a blind spot or an arrogance. What do you think?
I'm reminded of the phrase, do not attribute to malice that which can be explained by stupidity.
Yeah.
Okay, I think a lot of people are so in love with an idea that they completely forget about implementation.
Yep.
And that is you can't separate them. You can always, ideas can sound good on the surface, and there are some that are just outright stupid. But okay, an idea of a smart city, okay, that sounds great. How are you going to implement it? What are the risks, particularly to health, surveillance, privacy and all that kind of stuff? It's thin end of the wedge stuff.
And forcing a way of living on you, forcing it on you.
It is. And as that thin end of the wedge gets thicker and thicker and thicker, and the only way it can get thicker is if we allow it.
Yeah.
Because if everyone said, no, we're not doing this, we're just not. People in power happen to like to want to stay in power, so they will listen eventually with enough pressure.
Yeah. All right, I think we've come to the end of time for this Tech Tuesday. I'm just waiting for Kit to spring out of somewhere, but it hasn't happened.
I've had words.
Out back at the garage, right? with the unplugged. Let's talk more about, I'd love to go through the elements that make up a smart city. So we can sort of like map it out, right, and see how all the things contained within that kind of creates this web that we kind of fear if it doesn't go right. So are we okay to do that either next one or the one after that? Because I think that'd be really interesting and well timed.
Oh yes, I have the next two Tech Tuesday sessions mapped out along those lines.
Oh, cool.
But I would like to, if I can, finish off, with a couple of cool bits of technology, if I can quickly go over those.
Rebalance.
So one of them was a company called Arc Active, where they've basically reinvented the lead-acid battery. And here's a fun fact, 98% of a lead-acid battery, 98% is recyclable, and there's a good chance that the 12-volt starting battery in your car now is on its third iteration.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that. Gee.
And when Texas, during February 2021, had their power outages for nearly 2 months because of a really bad winter, people would steal Tesla power walls for energy. These things, because the lead acid battery, they won't make it into EVs because they're a lot heavy, but they've got the duration and good charging cycles like lithium ion does, but they're heavier, so they'll be less likely to be stolen.
Yeah.
So these are going to be like for basically like Tesla power walls, but better and built on cheaper technology. So they basically have reinvented that. And the other cool thing I saw was that I think it was Callahan, what's their last name?
Institute.
Yeah, that rings a bell.
Mm-hmm.
They demonstrated whereby in conjunction with Waikato Council, a drop in stator and impeller for pumping station pumps, so that eels, when they're migrating out to the Pacific Ocean, don't get sliced and diced.
Oh, so, that's clever.
It's a drop in replacement. So they've managed to halve the RPM by changing the design. They make the blades thicker and blunter, so the eel can pass through. And they had a 1.2 meter eel who did pass through. And when they were testing it, they had a rubber eel, and it all worked fine.
Rubber eel, oh dear.
Yeah. And
anyone see my rubber eel?
Not tonight.
No.
But they still managed to maintain the same flow rate of the pump.
Okay. And what, they get a little bit bruised up or something, but not sliced and diced? Is that how it works?
Yeah. And I thought that was properly cool.
I think that's very cool. And that would mean more eels ultimately, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Eventually?
Yes.
Get out into the ocean?
Yep. And then come back.
Yeah. Also, they have to go back up it too, right?
Well, yeah, they go up to the ocean and they do their thing
and then
come back. And
they'll be thinking, I don't want to go through that thing again, but I guess they have to on the way back.
Well, I suppose if they take the same route.
Yeah. I think you got that one right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's cool. That's a good way to end our Tech Tuesday for this week. Thank you, Stephen, and we'll get into the smart city stuff, deep dive, semi-deep dive, whatever, next week. We'll start that.
We shall.
Loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.